Welcome you, Lori, to our
Thank you.
CLLC gathering, and
Thanks
we're
for having me.
Very much looking forward to hearing your experiences in dealing with remote learning and sharing that with the group. Then we'll have a little give and take and some questions and discussions about that when you finish. So, Lori, the floor is yours, and the screen sharing is available to you whenever you're ready to begin.
All right. So thanks so much for having me today to share our experiences over the last 2 years as we really struggled to find a way to begin a distance learning campaign during COVID. Then we'll talk a little bit about what the future of e-learning looks like for us as we are coming back to school. Just as a quick overview, these are the areas where PLF works. That star right there is Siem Reap. We do have a pretty small urban project, but the rest of our students are scattered about in the countryside, kind of in the north, in the south of Siem Reap province, and then inching over into Prevehier. In these places, especially up in Prevehier, access to education is very limited. The majority of the population that we're working with are largely uneducated and living in poverty. The biggest challenge as we began 2 years ago was a lack of internet in the deep countryside. There is usually a 3G signal depending on your carrier, but it really was not sufficient to stream government e-learning classes. Also, a full 78% of our rural students don't have any kind of a device. Underlying those challenges is a lack of parental understanding or support. The majority of the parents in the villages where we work didn't complete primary school themselves, and they don't always understand the value of education, certainly not when students are not physically in school. Combined with this, the teachers in rural areas had no training in digital literacy, have no support from the government in terms of setting up access or training on how to manage online learning. So those were the main challenges. As we began it, we looked to some students that we have in a scholarship dormitories in Siem Reap City, where we bring our brightest rural students to come in to the city for their last 2 years of high school to do college prep. Those students were immediately put in lockdown in their houses, and they stayed that way the entire 18 months during COVID. During that time, they helped us curate the best online classes available, including some that were for purchase, which were far better than the government classes. And they are the ones who eventually found an app called eSchool. And once that was added to our mix, and the students could interact better with the teachers, then things really started taking off. We'll always owe a huge debt of gratitude to these high school students who really did a lot of the legwork for us. So, talking about high school, our first challenge was how to figure out how we're going to stream these classes using only 3G. We put together some kits for each location, which was a projector, a speaker, a smartphone, and a projector screen. And then the students were invited to come to our centers in the villages to join e-learning classes together. We were able to deploy at 4 rural locations for all of our students in grades 9 through 12. We were able to do that pretty quickly. Study groups were formed by grade at each location. We printed out study guides, worksheets, and exams from materials that are available on the Ministry of Education website. PLF University students who had returned home from Phnom Penh and also needed the internet for their online classes, they volunteered to facilitate the e-learning classes, and this turned out to be a critical piece. We gathered high school students into Facebook chat groups by grade so that they could also collaborate with other students at other locations. We took a lot of surveys during all of this as we went along, and there was a great misery reported among students who had a lot of trouble adapting to the online learning experience, which is something I think all students everywhere in the world had to face. Every step of the way, we tried to fine-tune everything that was a pain point for them so that they could adapt and gain confidence. I'm going to try to play a video, audio of a student thing. Let's see if it works.
My name is Rin Ying, And during the COVID time, school stopped while we were studying for the Gritwell National Exam. With studying online, there are both pros and cons.
Yes, hear it fine.
As I experienced, it was really hard for the first few weeks. I struggled more with the subject matter, and the explanation from the teacher was more difficult to understand. Also, sometimes internet becomes crazy. However, I continue and got some great experience from that. In my opinion, it was 80% as good as extra classes because we got a smaller group of students and we can stop the lectures and talk back and forth about the explanation. Moreover, we can spend our evening time to sit down for group discussion with our team, which is really helpful. Some students are really great and good explainers. That's not to say that we don't need teachers. We still 100% need them. And luckily, we got our other university students at home to help us. If we continue any other e-learning after COVID finish, please count me in.
This 20% gap that students were identifying as the difference between online classes and extra classes that they would normally be trying to go to, they figured out pretty quickly that that gap depended largely on their own commitment to adapt to a new learning experience. They learned to utilize study groups and work collaboratively. They learned to integrate exercises from the printed study guides, to get answers to questions via their own research and network with PLF students and university students for tutoring. Those are the things that kind of over time began to close that gap for them. Now, that's high school, and we're going to talk about primary school, which was completely another thing. Thinking about what to do with primary students in remote areas was a bit of a train wreck. For 2 years during school closures, we did food drops for almost 800 children that have food insecurity problems. And during that time, exercises were passed out to those primary school students, corrected and handed back. We had to do most of that with our own staff because a lot of the government teachers just disappeared. We also reopened our libraries at every location for non-contact book borrowing, which the students would come and do when they came to pick up their food parcels. We had to do that without permission because really it wasn't allowed. This gave them the opportunity to check out books, which they did in record number across all grades. And that was pretty much all we could do for primary school children who were living in remote areas. We started thinking about what the damage was going to be on this. And during COVID, we started building remedial Khmer language curriculum and a math curriculum in hopes that once school started, we could get the kids caught up before they threw up their hands and gave up on school. Several months in, the ministry ordered rural teachers to go into the village and teach their classes. They would hold classes under someone's house or under a tree rather than in the school. There were no COVID protocols in place and all of their resources were back in the school. A lot of parents also wouldn't let their children go. The fear of COVID was very great in remote areas. So all of this made no sense whatsoever, but we did our best to source the government teachers with what they needed in order to teach in these rough environments. We hauled desks out, set up whiteboards, provided soap and masks and things like this. That went on for a few months. The outcome of all of this is that there was a report that came out from the government recently about assessing the learning loss among grade 6 students countrywide. And these three bars are our own internal data, but the middle one lines up very well with what the government was finding, which is on a grade six Khmer language exam, the average score was 45.7, which is a failing score. And we were right there with it. Pre-COVID, our internal testing students would be average score of 72%. And our students after 5 months of remedial classes, plus being back in government school, brought that number up slightly, but it still got quite a ways to go. Something interesting regarding math was that it was never great to begin with. You see 64% score on math, but the students retain this knowledge better than the national average by a pretty wide margin. So we were happy to see that. The interesting part for us was seeing what happened after they were back to school for 5 months and had 7 months of remedial math classes, even after 2 years of school closures with nothing but these dismal worksheets every 2 weeks. They're actually performing better now than they were pre-COVID with all these extra classes and the attention that's being given at public school. This is making us kind of brainstorm what the outcome might be if we incorporated additional math classes into our primary school programming on a more permanent basis. In March of 2021, COVID began spreading finally to the northern provinces, and the ministry ordered rural teachers to stop gathering students in the village for classes. They also ordered us to stop broadcasting e-learning at our centers. Students could still gather in their homes in the village for self-study, but then, of course, they had no access to the class. I bring this up only because it was the first time I've ever seen high school students mobilize as a group and take action against what to them felt like a disenfranchisement. Being led by our furloughed university students, who also needed the internet for their classes, the students approached us and tried to understand why they couldn't come to the closed center and just use the equipment on their own. They were using the logic that if it was okay for them to gather and study in the village at home, should be okay for them to gather and study in our center, which is also in the village. We sort of agreed with this logic. And so we basically sent all of our staff out of our centers and handed them the keys, waiting for someone to say we couldn't do it anymore and just let them do that. Technically, we weren't running the classes anymore. Technically, the centers were closed. The students were self-directing their own learning and did very well. And this was yet another silver lining to come out of the disaster of COVID. At one center, the government would absolutely not allow students to gather at our lab, whether we were open, closed, present or not. So those students found a bankrupt restaurant in their village that had internet access and asked if they could take the equipment outside. And we let them do that. And here they are in their restaurant having classes. We also emptied high school books out of our libraries and brought them to the villages so that high school students could check them out every 2 weeks. Book borrowing among high school students during COVID increased 4 times during that period. So that was also a happy outcome. The whole experience was a pretty trying time for us, our teachers, and especially for our students, because we weren't prepared to enable distance learning by any stretch. Of course, our students also had to struggle with a sudden demand for a level of digital literacy they just didn't have. But because of the urgency of the situation, all of us had no choice but to find a way around all the obstacles together. With school closed for so long and most of our other projects suspended, we had a level of bandwidth to address this issue we wouldn't have had in a normal time. And having such a large number of our students fully engaged in distance learning within a period of a few months would have been absolutely unimaginable during normal times. As you all know, the practice of having 75% of the curriculum taught in public school class, leaving the most important 25% to be taught privately after school for a price, excludes children who live in poverty from passing the national exam, contributes greatly to the huge national dropout rate through high school. Pre-COVID, we had about 25% of our high school population on scholarships that paid for extra classes. The cost of these scholarships, when you have hundreds of students taking them, was prohibitive. So we could only apply it to our best students. That left an average student just on their own to do the best they could. Being able to suddenly triple that reach was a game changer for our students and for us. Students are reporting that online classes are just as useful as extra classes. And since school has restarted, students have demanded that e-learning continue, and so we are, especially in rural and remote areas. We knew that if we could keep this momentum going, it could change a lot of things for us and our students. University students majoring in math and science degrees are taking a great enjoyment in leading tutoring via Zoom for high school students in those complicated subjects. Most of our existing workshops and all of our guest speaker events have been moved to digital presentations and parked on a YouTube channel, which makes them more available to students. During school closures, we put a focus on the upskilling of our own office and field staff. And here is the big one. The big one is that something always missing from the Cambodian education system is a concept of self-guided learning. Students are now absolutely on fire with their newfound ability to research, collaborate, group learn, and self-study. Putting education more firmly in their own hands is something we've been trying to accomplish for many years. University students who have lived through 2 years of online learning are now coaching the next generation on best e-learning strategies. We are routinely now having grade 12 students join tips and tricks presentations being led by university students. Those are also recorded and uploaded on our YouTube channel. Students are finding those extremely helpful. We also have over 1,000 students in two provinces connected to each other and to us via various private Facebook pages where the students can stay up to date with workshops they can join, whether in real in real life or on YouTube, and chat with each other, collaborate on exercises and exams together. And that's really been a big movement forward for our students and us. Moving forward, we'll be focused on helping students achieve digital literacy at a much earlier age. When school began again, we launched 8 different projects, most of them built to ride the momentum of digital literacy and self-guided learning. The first steps were to install internet wherever that's possible and setting up permanent 3G hotspots where it isn't. We're continuing the broadcast of eSchool in rural areas. We have loaded eSchool onto every computer we have everywhere for students to come, log into classes, and control their own coursework at their own pace on their own schedule. We have Microsoft Office curriculum for upper secondary school students. We've had that for a long time. And we'll install 2 more labs before the end of the year as there is a huge wait list for classes. Next year, we'll add a Google Docs module to the coursework for upper secondary students to introduce them to Google Docs. Moving digital literacy downstream to younger students is a priority for us. We're putting tablets in libraries for primary school students, which helps them introduce them to technology and also has had a very positive effect on attracting more boys to the library, which is good. We are piloting a new curriculum utilizing Google Apps for middle school students, and we'll launch that next year. So the reward of surviving COVID was this strong movement toward bringing digital literacy to our students. And this is really reshaping the way that they learn. The results we're seeing are really phenomenal. So summarizing what we kind of all learned together and the takeaways on this are these few points. Students studying in isolation by themselves do not learn as much or as well as students studying in groups. So broadcasting the classes to a group of students is better than giving everyone a cell phone and, you know, certainly cheaper. Students taking the science track had a great deal of difficulty with advanced science and math courses. So printing out the study guides were very helpful, and we will continue to do that every year for grade 12 students. Gathering math and science students into online study groups headed up by university students majoring in those subjects was and is extremely helpful. Getting steady feedback from students was important so that they didn't give up. We needed to keep them engaged, and all of the small details really mattered during the course of that. Ditching the government program was really smart for us. It's disorganized and ineffective. Buying the e-school courses was a much better, had a much better result. The cost of it is $15 per subject per year, so it's not too prohibitive. Building the Facebook groups was instrumental to connecting students and facilitators across locations, and to be able to sort of advertise special Zoom classes and workshops. Those are ongoing and has made it much easier for us to stay connected to our students in remote areas. The most important thing was that e-learning challenged our students to take responsibility for their own learning. It has built a cohort of students who now have the tools to become lifelong learners. They understand now the internet contains more than games and social media. It contains the sum total of all human knowledge, and it's at their fingertips, and they really get this now. They have become researchers and collaborators. This was the most monumental thing that could have occurred, and because of it, it changed our students' mindsets and made things now possible that we could only dream of before. It has completely reshaped priorities for us as an organization, and inside that infrastructure are many possibilities for continuing to build students who are responsible for their own learning. It's a door that once opened leads out to everywhere. So thanks very much for your attention today. It's been a pleasure to share these experiences with you. I look forward to answering any questions that you might have. All right, how do I get out of here? Stop the share.
Stop the screen share. There you did it.
There we go. All right.
Well, Lori, thank you. Thank you very much. That is obvious that you put some time and energy into preparing that presentation. I see Nadia giving you a hand, and I'm sure others in the group appreciate it as well. I've got two or three questions that I wanted to ask, but I'm going to hold mine and let the group have the floor first. So who has a question for Lori? Really?
No questions. Okay.
Well, they're just slow to ask the question. I see Nadia's raised her hand.
I think I missed it a little bit, but I was just curious how you're going to keep these the students are really motivated to study themselves. How do you plan to keep that enthusiasm?
Well, all of it is so organic that I can't stress enough how we didn't have a plan, and we really still don't. This, it's completely student driven, and as long as they're demanding it, we're going to provide it. Now, whether it will wane, I don't know, but we've been in school now for 6 months, and nobody has said, we're not doing this anymore, or we want to stop doing it. In fact, if anything, it's growing in its with students' engagement. So we'll see. If they stop wanting to do it, then we'll stop doing it. But it is reshaping the way that we're looking at high school scholarships for extra classes. I'm not really sure how much we'll proceed with that. It's always been kind of a pain point for us. And if these classes are doing the same thing for these kids, then it solves a lot of problems for the ones especially who don't qualify for just the average student is not qualifying for these scholarships from us. So I don't know, we'll see. It'll be interesting for all of us to see how it continues, but we're ready to, we've already made the investment in the equipment. We already know how to do it. So it's not like it's costing us anything to continue doing it. So we'll see.
And have you received feedback from your university students? Has the transition from high school to university learning been easier because of this kind of self-guided study and research?
Very much. And that's something that the university students have really helped us drive home to the high school cohort, you know, and that's why these university students are creating tutorials for people. Look, this is how you do it. I really struggled in the beginning because I was doing it the wrong way. And here's the way that you need to, you know, pause the class, talk together about what the teacher just said, start the class again, you know, all these little things that will help students be better at it. So yeah, our university students are really leading the way in terms of don't give up, keep doing this, and this is how you do it well. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah.
Lori, is much of your teaching in English or in Khmer?
It's all in Khmer, 100%.
It's 100% in Khmer. And so these programs that you were able to purchase are also in Khmer then?
Correct. Ah. Yeah.
So who prepared that material? Who made that available?
That's a really good question. And it's something that we think we have gotten to the bottom of, but we're not sure. But we think it was a bunch of government teachers who were very dissatisfied with the government thing. And they're like, this is rubbish. There needs to be a better way. And they've put it together and put it out, you know, to make money, which thank God, because it really is a thousand times better than what the government.
Wow. And it sounds like the cost is modest.
You know, it wouldn't be if we had, we've got 1,000 kids in grades 9 through 12. And if we had to purchase it for each one of those students, that's a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the fact that we're broadcasting it, we just have this one phone that we need to have it loaded on that's broadcasting to 30 kids. And so then it becomes super affordable. Yeah.
You've managed that very nicely.
Well, all credit goes to those kids that were in lockdown in our dorms. They're the ones who found it. And I'm not sure how long it would have taken us to figure that out.
Well, I'm really attracted to your discovery and to your outcome that the students were driving the program.
Yeah, again, you know, very organic. We PLF, you know, didn't really know how to do it. And so our best movements forward when you're not sure about how you need to be doing something is to let it drive itself. And so we did that and had a very good outcome. And it was important for the students to be able to drive the bus as well. So yeah, that was important.
And much of what you talked about was at the high school level, and in cooperation with these very generous university students with their time. How about back at the primary school, grades 1 through 6? I noticed the word train wreck came up in the conversation regarding primary schools. Did you find the same level of students asking, if they wouldn't be able to organize and admit or lobby for themselves just yet, probably, but were they asking for more education, or were you pushing them?
No, they're 8 years old.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking the question.
And anyway, there was nothing to give them. There was no program. There was nothing to provide.
So no, these programs that you were broadcasting are we're at the high school level focused on math, science, and Khmer. Is that correct?
Well, the eSchool app has all the subjects. Most students didn't need to take, you know, what, geography or whatever. They were really focused on math, science, Khmer language. That's what they were pretty much focused on, for sure.
And these e-learning programs covered those bases then?
Yeah, and you know, really, we've gotten semester scores on students now that they've been back to school, and our high school kids are doing very well after all of this. So they've missed 2 years of school, been passed two grades forward, and they're doing okay. They're holding good scores. So it worked. I guess the rubber will hit the road when we get to the grade 12 national exam, which I suspect will be dumbed down quite a bit this year, but we'll see. We'll see.
Well, that would be interesting, and maybe you can get Shailan to speak a bit about that also, because I know that Global Child has been doing some special classes and some tutoring and coaching. And it's had some very good successes with passing the grade 9 and the grade 12 national exams. Shailan, are you still with us there?
Yes, Bill. Sorry that the internet at my place is up and down, and day four. So I couldn't open the camera. You hear me clearly?
Well, we can hear you just fine. Thank you.
Yes. For the experience of the Global Child with e-learning, and we have and student and grade in grade 9 and grade 12. Yes, and we use and Zoom for the teaching by online, we have the subject of the teacher, yeah, the real teacher of the subject, and to have the student math, physics, yes, and that in English, yeah, that we have for the grade 9, and for grade 12, and we have math, biology, physics, and in English, yeah. I saw, and the result that the student that join our project, and the result at we very appreciate with that, because and the most almost the student and pass, yes, as that I send the report to Bill, then more than 90%, yes, that they pass, yeah, because then they study and by online, they ask the question that they asked, and the problem that they met in the during that they study, and they ask in the real during that they met the teacher in the during the online session. Yes. So for the student, then they join directly, and often they join and almost pass. Yes.
Well, I remember it was a very high, above 90% pass rate that you were getting for both the grade 9 and grade 12 exams.
Yes.
I would be interested to know, did you experience the same level of students interacting with other students, essentially teaching themselves, self-directed learning that Lori was describing?
Yes, because some students and even that they join the cable, and sometimes the student join and one or Sometimes one time I can join, but and some student and try again and again, three or four times only in the 1 hour for the live session in the class. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then I think, and because they think that the state exam is very important for them, so and I try again and again and to join in the live session that they can meet the teacher and ask teacher for the something that they don't understand. Yeah. Yes, Bill, I think I have the only this, and thank you.
thanks for that. Thanks for that explanation. What other e-learning experiences did some of the others of you have during this time that you could share here? Either sharing or asking questions to Lori.
I have a question for Lori. I think I didn't quite understand because I wasn't here during COVID. I came like when the school almost opened again. So it's very interesting to hear, but So during the pandemic, they were not in school, and then you started the program, but now that their schools are open, so now it's just kind of the same curriculum, right? But, or like, how do they do it? Do they go to school and the extra classes? Like, I don't quite.
Yeah, they're going to school as usual, and instead of joining extra classes after school, they're coming to e-learning. So yeah. We're running these classes in the evenings at the center or wherever, you know, in these four locations, and they are coming after school for those. Yeah.
Are you still using the same teaching materials that you, what's the name of that organization that you were getting that material from?
E-School.
Hmm. Well, appropriately named, and interesting that it was created by a group of dissatisfied Khmer teachers.
I can't get an official word on that, but that's apparently what the deal is. And when you're looking at the classes, the teacher that's giving those classes is a government high school teacher. So, I think they just were, but they have a better system of they're running, each class has a special Telegram group. So the teachers are sending exercises to the students. The students do the exercises and send them back. They're doing exams that way. And there's a much better feedback thing. You know, the government program, there was no feedback. They'd give exercises, students would do them, but they didn't send them back to the teacher, and then there was no loop.
We have a slang term in English. You probably heard it, Lori, that the teachers were doing a skunk works. Skunk works. And yeah. I guess that name came about when a group of engineers decided that they were tired of all the big company bureaucracy and rules and regulations, and they just got a small group together and engineered a better product. And I think that story comes out of Lockheed Aviation many, many years ago.
So something similar. So I really don't know a lot about, you know, why it exists, but I'm very grateful that it does. Yeah.
Did you make any inroads, Lori, into primary school?
No, we couldn't take a proactive approach there. We had to build a reactive. It just had us on the back foot. We had to wait till those kids came back to school. And then we scrapped a lot of our mission is to provide auxiliary classwork for all levels of students that adds to their public school learning experience. So for older kids, this is English, tech, workshops. Younger kids, this is art, music, you know, also English, things like this. So Libraries everywhere, all of that sort of thing. And now we feel like, especially in the primary school space, these remedial Khmer and math classes have bumped everything else that we typically would be doing with primary school students. And it's very reactive. It's not, we couldn't do anything at the during the 2 years to keep them in place. We had to let somebody who was in the third grade when COVID started and just barely getting their literacy together, those kids are now in the fifth grade and they don't know how to read and write. It has been especially a problem for kids that have jumped across to secondary school. Holy cow. Our current grade 7 and 8 students are they missed their last 2 years of primary school, which is quite frankly when you learn everything. And so they're in a pretty bad way. I don't know how long we thought we were going to do remedial classes just for this year, but it's starting to look less and less like that's going to be possible. I think we're going to have to carry on.
Of all the organizations that are in the CLLC group, at least half, if not more, are providing some form of this auxiliary education to supplement what's taught during the government schools. And I'm sorry that Leng Sing isn't here. I'm sure he'd have something to comment, and Tai San and others. That my concern is, what are we going to do about the loss of time for these younger kids, formative years? That's the base, the foundation. And I can even remember in my own education when I kind of got this class at the 101 level, and then I moved to the 201 level, and I was struggling even there because I didn't really get it done at the 101. And I really had to work to get solid in that course material. I could just imagine what these kids are going through.
Yeah, I think we'll see a pretty big dropout. I think we'll see a pretty big dropout this year, next year. We're bracing ourselves for, our retention is going to look like it did 15 years ago. And it's going to be tragic for these communities where, things are really rolling. And now suddenly it's just for this cohort, it's going to leave a scar. There's going to be a scar.
I would think so. And especially I've been to a couple of those very remote provinces that you speak of. We visited out there with you. And when the parents didn't even finish primary school, it's pretty hard to get them to appreciate the...
Well, and not only that, but then the kid has nowhere to go. I mean, if your parents were kind of switched on and could read you a book and, I don't know, do some exercises with you or something during that period of time, then that would have been one thing. But when there's no capacity for that, then they've got nowhere to go. They've got nothing coming in. So it is really tragic. And if I extrapolate it out, we've got what now, 78% of the population living in rural areas and where access to education is sometimes a bit hit and miss. That's a pretty big part of the population of young children that have been affected by this. So it'll leave a mark for sure. Well,
Laurie, one of my big takeaways from your presentation that just smacks me right in the face, and hadn't before, is that we're probably able to struggle through as best you could, and in some cases with surprising facility for the high school kids and maybe some of the others. And again, I'd be really interested to hear from somebody at PEPE and Ariel, maybe you can speak a little bit about some of the classes for high school and post-high school kids that you've been running. But boy, my takeaway from this is the pain point is in that primary level.
100%. 100%.
Ariel, what would you add to this conversation? Oh, Ariel might have stepped away. There he is.
Yeah, no, I'm right here.
We're just making sure you're awake. Just taking.
No, I'm taking notes because, Sandra, I started with my program really just shy of us coming back to full classes. So the entire time that we were actually, our teachers and our students were working with online classes and all those platforms, I only hear about them now in the past tense. So, you know, I know that we did a lot of things to make it work for our students and our situation, but I think it's actually really important that the rest of my staff and my team see this presentation just to get an idea of how important it is to be on your feet with these things. I think we did a good job, but I think there's a lot of takeaways here that I think would be useful to us and really kind of invaluable. So I really appreciate this presentation. Okay. Great amount.
Okay.
So, I don't think I have much to add. I'm very impressed. I'm very satisfied with a lot of what I'm hearing and learning about this program in the last couple of years.
Good to hear. And there is somebody. Paula is here from Pepe. How were you able to keep e-learning going during the 2 years? Nearly 2 years of lockdown.
Thanks, Bill, for giving me a talk for e-learning. I'm not really work with the teaching online, but I heard some of the team share about it. First, students have frustrated in internet connection, and second, they don't have really enough materials. When the COVID comes, that they have to go back to the e-learning, and some of the events that we have been planned have been canceled because of COVID situation. So we were very frustrated, but we also, at the same time, we find a solution to get students engaged with the e-learnings again. Mm-hmm. We find some resource to support them. We have like computers and smartphones to whom that really need the most, and outside the city. So that's what we experience. And some of students lack in technology, so it finds difficult for them as well, especially with the internet connection. They have to go back to their hometown because in the countryside and the internet access is limited, and they feel like we try our best to keep them engaged. Otherwise, they feel like they don't really engage to school. But our teacher in the dream class in Barents and Caroline High School try to keep them engaged. So it was hard, but we did our best to support them. Most of them not really in high school, so we don't really work on the primary schools as in the foundation.
Yeah, I know that most of your kids are in high school or post high school, but somebody like Lita, you're working primarily with primary school kids. Are you not?
No, I'm not working with the primary, I'm working with the high schools.
No, you're working, Paula, no, I know you're working at Pepe with the high school, but I was referring to Lita at Campu, and I think that mostly Lita and her team is working with much younger kids.
Yes. We met challenge a lot during COVID-19. Because the target school that we are working with are public school, so the technology not enough and the equipment also not enough. So teacher, they try to teach as much as they can. I mean, they put a lot of effort to the student. So 50 students in a class, they come to the class during COVID-19, by computer around 5 or 4 students only. So there are many fail during COVID-19 for that 2 years. But fortunately, the government, they have like solution like focus group. So the teachers, they went to the student how directly, and they give like a worksheet to the student to do, and then in the next day they will collect it and give the new one. This is the solution from the teacher at the rural areas.
I'm sorry that Rebecca Large isn't with us also this evening, because CFC, Caring for Cambodia, probably interacts with more students than any of the other groups here. And I know they did a ton of worksheet distribution, but I'm not sure quite how the logistics of all that worked out. So this is a conversation we'll probably want to have more of in the future.
And yes. The worksheet. Let me just say one thing about the worksheets, and it's that, okay, if a child is not in a classroom environment, whether that would be digital or in real life, they can't be taught new concepts and moved forward. These worksheets, in our experience, all it was doing was sort of trying to help them hang on to what they already knew.
Yeah, practice what they know.
Move things forward when you're not able to actually teach. A worksheet isn't necessarily a teaching device for a third grader.
No, it's a practice device.
It's just, let's review. Do you still know what 5 + 5 is? Can you still write your name? You know, you can't move it forward. And so that was a challenge, I think, with the worksheet deal.
Yeah, a big challenge for sure. Welcome, so Paul. She's connecting. I think she'll be joining us momentarily here.
If she's in Ratanakiri, that could take a while.
I'm not sure where she is, but I know she's out in the field somewhere, and we just lost her. So
yeah,
looks like that's a weak internet signal. Just following along on what you were saying. Well, there's Sopal trying again. What you were saying, Lori, is that we've been discussing the practicality of another workshop. I'm returning again in the middle of October, and that we can gather for another workshop about what did we learn from COVID? Where are the blessings from it? I know we all suffered, and it was a royal pain. But you've demonstrated with great facility here. We learned a lot. We added skills. And I think we can be better going forward because of what we learned there. And I'm mindful that a half a dozen of other CLLC members just aren't here tonight or this morning for whatever reason, and they're missing this conversation. So Paul and I have talked about this, and we think we should gather the leaders for a day or so to explore more deeply what we learned and to share this information so we can all get a little better, faster, smarter, get better, smarter, faster, with this shared information. So this is a good start, but I don't think the conversation is finished at this point. I think you just primed the pump nicely.
Can I say a little bit more?
Sure.
Yes, I just want to say that I do like the sentence that Lori said, everything changed when students began taking responsibility for their own education. I have 8 years old kid, and he was grade 2 last 2 years ago, and then it was really difficult when he started e-learning class at the first year. He just ran around and then just come when the teachers call him, and it need a lot of coach. Standby by mother or parent. And yes, a year after he start more focused and then on the time to study and he comes, so it will make us a lot easy. So that is brilliant, I have.
Mm. We all have the capacity to adapt. Sometimes we have to wait for a situation to force us to learn something new. And this was certainly one of those cases, but we can all adapt. I was very proud of the desire and ability of students to adapt to something so extraordinarily different from what they're used to. Yeah, amazing.
Well, and it may be that there's still some opportunities, some hybrid opportunities for hybrid learning as we go forward, that we may end up doing a significantly better job from what we've learned here. Were you, Lita, were you getting another comment in there?
Yes, I'm just wondering that the Illinois is continue with Laurie, or you are going to do some hybrid like Bill said. You will keep the program continues for the evening?
Yes, all the programs for grades 9 through 12 are continuing. Yes, exactly the same. All the students are still engaged. Nobody has stopped coming to class at all. So yeah, it's carrying on the same. And all of these students that we're not able to pay for their high school extra classes are especially the ones driving that, because for them it's the same as going to extra classes, but nobody has to pay for it, so they can do it. And that's going to change a lot of things for us. I think it could potentially change a lot of things for a lot of organizations that are struggling with how to subsidize students' extra class fees. Yeah.
Well, I would very much love to convene a bigger gathering of, as we've done with the workshops in the past, where we get 30, 35 of you in the room together and spend a day exploring best practices and fresh ideas on a particular topic. And I just think this whole one of e-learning and remote education would be very, very timely right now.
So thank you, Laurie, for your presentation and also the comments.
Yes, thank you. Pleasure.
Well, it's a little after 11. I don't want to cut this really important conversation short. So let me just ask around if there's anybody who has not spoken yet. Is there something you'd like to say or ask or volunteer for the group? We'll be quiet for another 30 seconds and see who would like to raise their hand or step forward. So Paul, are you able to hear us now?
Hello, Bill. Hello, everyone. Yeah, I'm in the jungle. Sorry.
Well, I know that you're...
My reception is not that great.
Oh, we know that you're quite remote. And I'm glad you made the special effort to join with us. Laurie has begun a really good conversation, and it just makes me all the more interested in having that one day on COVID-related learnings that you and I have talked about when I get back in the middle of October.
Yeah, I know that Laurie doing an amazing job with Fanny and all the lesson learned. And yeah, that's something we can discuss for more we could do together as a team.
Oh yeah, and the presentation, it was excellent, and it's all recorded. So it'll be posted on our website within a day or two, as soon as I get my webmaster, my good brother Tom, to trim it for me and get it posted. So Lori, thank you again for
a pleasure. Yeah.
For doing this. It's important information to share with the group. I know it took time and energy on your part, but that's what we do in this group is, and if you look at the quite a library of these videos now that we've accumulated on a whole variety of topics, mentoring and project management and strategic planning and dealing with stress. And it's a particular joy to see about half of them now being done by Khmer or leaders of Khmer organizations. And it isn't just something that I'm coming up with or Peter is doing, but I love the sharing and I love seeing the learning that's going on. So thank you, Lori. You were a great contributor. I'm going to stop the recording at this point.